We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked.
And complete the dang fence.
This bill that we will sign today is not a revolutionary bill.
Cast down your bucket where you are.
We come from France.
And I am, adamantly against illegal immigrants.
They're coming in by the thousands, just unbelievable.
A wall is an immorality.
Who are you rooting for?
Those masters of the universe are at it again.
You maniac! You blew it up!
Welcome to Parsing Immigration Policy, the podcast of the Center for Immigration Studies. My name is Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center. And this is an election year, obviously. And even though the Center doesn't get involved in electoral politics, obviously examining and analyzing what's going on is pretty important to policy outcomes. And so I thought it would be good to have as a guest to talk to Mickey Kaus, who covers the politics of immigration pretty well. He is author of The End of Equality and was probably the, if not the first, one of the first political bloggers starting back in the late 1990s, and has been following the politics of the immigration issue for quite some time. And so I thought it would be great to have him on. Mickey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mark.
So I don't know, I guess maybe the place to start is the question I always get. I have thoughts on this myself, but why is Biden doing this? You know, even Obama was more cautious on immigration, and certainly Bill Clinton before him was, depending on which way the wind was blowing, was relatively hawkish on immigration, at least on enforcement. So why has Biden gone all in on the anti-borders agenda?
It's bizarre. You're right. If, you know, the immigration is killing him, it's the number one issue in many polls. And yet, if Bill Clinton were president, he would clearly have cracked down and shifted to the center.
Sure.
As he did with welfare.
And with immigration, too, obviously.
Okay, yes.
Right.
And Biden has resisted. Now, is it because, you know, there's one theory he's out of it. He's not really in control of his administration. The, you know, more pro loose borders, open borders types are running the show. And they clearly seem to be running the show, but that doesn't, I don't think he's that out of it. What I came down to was a somewhat cynical view, which is he thinks it is helping him boost the economy, the economics numbers, and lower inflation for the reasons that Paul Krugman talks about now in his new pro-immigration state in the New York Times, which is,
right,
you know, it lowers wages. You know, I think it lowers wages. We can have an argument about whether that brings down inflation. And it clearly boosts GDP just mathematically. It doesn't boost it per capita. But if you add more people, they're going to be working and the GDP is going to go up. And so he somehow thinks that, you know, the working class will never notice the wage hit they're taking, and it'll be good overall, and it'll help my reelection. And he can't stand up to the also to the left that, you know, will say it's racist to enforce the border. That still doesn't quite add up to a 100% explanation, but it's the best I can do.
I guess. I mean, that's, I don't know, my sense is that's given him a little more credit than he deserves. I think the second part of your explanation may be more important. In fact, the first part about how this benefits the economy may be kind of cope on his part. In other words, rationalization. It's not clear to me how much he even runs immigration policy. And I'm not making jokes about Alzheimer's or anything, but I mean, he's clearly a pretty weak president, more almost a figurehead. And so, you know, it's Mayorkas and all the other people actually doing the job who are doing what comes natural to them. I don't know. That's kind of my sense.
He's clearly unwilling to fire Mayorkas or tell him what to do. And I don't quite know why. He hasn't fired anybody. I guess he doesn't like to fire people. There is one really bizarre aspect to it, which is you hear these leaks from the administration, and leaks are very rare from this administration, about how they had a tense debate because Biden demanded that the refugee number be low.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big meeting about the refugee numbers. Well, you and I know the refugee numbers are paltry compared to the numbers that Mayorkas was letting through the border. So why have a big fuss within the administration over whether the refugee number should be 150,000 or 75,000 when Mayorkas is letting in 5 million at the border. It doesn't make any sense. It's almost as if they have a fake debate with Biden participating, and then the real policy gets done, you know, outside of the room when without him knowing.
But that's kind of my point. That's kind of my point is that, you know, they're picking something to talk about, refugee numbers, that he's at least he has experience with since he was in the Senate, what, it started in the 70s or something? In other words, he's dealt with this issue. So it's something he knows about. They stage this debate kind of for his benefit. And then, like you said, they kind of go and do whatever the heck they want afterwards. I don't know. I mean, that's, again, it's not an issue of his being senile or whatever. It's just his not really being in charge of his own administration to the degree that an energetic executive could clearly exercise more control, I think.
I guess that's right. I guess, you know, I just spent last evening reading the transcript of his interview with the special prosecutor, and he's not as senile as you would think he might be. He goes off on tangents, but he's always gone off on tangents. That's his modus operandi.
And he's making the car noises too, apparently. That was in
I haven't got to that
the
part
transcript.
Yet.
Yeah. He went vroom vroom or something like that.
But you know, he does talk to Bibi Netanyahu on the phone. He talks to world leaders on the phone, and he talks to Larry Summers on the phone.
Right.
And Summers has been pushing this idea that wages have to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Summers thinks immigration is key to that. So maybe it's a cope. Maybe he says, well, you know, I'll let Mayorkas do his thing because it's going to help with inflation. But I think, you know, that adds up to an explanation.
Right, right.
It goes against the Joe Biden we thought we were getting, you know, when he ran for president several times, including the last time. But there you have it. It's one day the mystery will be explained. Like, does Mayorkas have something over him? I don't think so, but.
Right. Yeah, so when the flood of kiss and tell books come out after the administration ends, only then will we really know.
Unfortunately, impeaching Mayorkas means you can't fire him now.
Right, of course.
Because, you know, now that would be like throwing him overboard when he's attacked. So we're stuck with the guy.
I mean, if Biden were to win re-election, it seems to me that would be an opportunity, you know, for a clean start, although who knows what the result of that would be.
It's also an opportunity to, you know, keep the floodgates open.
Right,
because there's nothing to stop him.
That's for sure, yeah.
So at some point, you know, some pollster may come to him and say, look, this is killing you. We're going to lose unless you do something. Hard to believe they haven't done that already.
Right. My sense is, and this is kind of a good segue to my next question, is I think their thinking on that is that the Senate bill and the failure of it gives them an out where they can just blame the Republicans because they didn't vote for this wonderful bipartisan bill, because they don't seem to have any intention of changing policy. The president had the opportunity, both when he visited the border and then when he gave the State of the Union speech, to make the supposed announcement about cracking down that they had leaked in trial balloons before. And neither time, both times, he just said, you know, the Republicans just passed this bill, then I could do my job. And my sense is that's kind of their answer to his getting killed in the public opinion polls on immigration. I don't know what you think.
I think that's right. There were all these leaks from the White House saying we're thinking of closing the border.
Bold measures, dramatic steps,
right,
all
right,
kinds of stuff.
Right, and that did not happen, as you say. And in the State of the Union, he has doubled down on this gimmick, I think, which is, as Byron York says, he applies it continually to other issues, which is he screws things up and then they have some kind of bill that the Republicans can't stomach. And he says, well, if only you'd pass the bill, things would be fine.
right.
And that's basically this is the biggest example of that strategy. And I think they're deluded.
Right.
I mean, it's quite possible that they really think this is going to work through November. That, you know, in November, people are going to be saying, well, you could have passed that Senate bill. And there's going to be a lot of other bills, sort of other proposals, other debates that have come in the meantime. And I just don't think people are going to remember the Lankford bill, the mighty Lankford bill, which, as you and I know, was a crock.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes people are deluded. And if not the Biden White House, who?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So about the Lankford bill, what do you think was going on there? I mean, my sense is McConnell's goal in, you know, sort of starting that process where Lankford and Sinema and Murphy got together and negotiated this thing, it was that he wanted Ukraine money more than anything else and figured, you know, he could sort of kind of do some kind of slapdash border thing, sort of boob bait for Bubba and get his money. And that, I mean, I don't know, my sense is that was his initial thinking. What, why do you think that whole Lankford bill drama even happened?
Well, I think he in part got hornswoggled by Schumer.
Sure.
Who realized very cynically that, you know, if they came up with some bill, either it would pass, which would be a victory for them because it was shot full of holes, or it wouldn't pass and he could blame Republicans. And McConnell was sort of duped by that, but he went along for the reasons you say. And I went back and looked at his voting record for the bogus, you know, comprehensive immigration reforms that have come up for a vote in the Senate. He's voted against them.
Who's voting record?
McConnell.
Oh, okay.
McConnell
right.
has, you know, but he sort of was, you had the sense it was at the last minute and he really didn't mind it.
Right, right.
He realized he had to vote against it, but he really doesn't care that much about the border or enforcement.
Right.
And so I think he probably sincerely thinks it was an improvement. At least he tells himself.
Right, right.
But it was a huge disaster for the Republicans because it threatens, if this gimmick works, to give away their best issue.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
So at least when the Republicans gave away Bob Dole's best issue by signing welfare reform, they got welfare reform.
Yeah, they got something out of it, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, for instance, H.R. 2, which is the House version of an immigration bill, which actually would do something, in a sense, yes, there's real policy changes there. I would be all for it because it really does do positive things. But in a sense, it really was kind of a lifeline for Biden. I mean, he could have signed that and declared victory, which is the kind of thing I think Clinton probably would have done.
Exactly. And, you know, John Fetterman said it was fine with him.
Right.
Basically. So if there's nothing in that that is so impossible for Democrats to swallow, except the concept that we'll actually, you know, have a border.
And that's a problem.
E-Verify does drive the activists crazy because it makes it harder for illegals to switch jobs.
Right.
So yeah. they say, now you're trapping our people in jobs. And what I say is, well, they can work in the job they have, they can work in the underground economy, or they can return to their native countries. The only thing that's they're preventing is the fourth option of switching to a better job.
Right.
But my question to you is, you know, it now looks like they're going to get Ukraine aid
right.
without any border thing.
Yep.
If McConnell was smart, he should have realized all along that they could get. But we had some hopes that something would actually be achieved, that Johnson would say, you only get Ukraine aid if you do X.
Right.
And that X would be something meaningful like E-Verify or, I don't know, some asylum reform or something. Is there any hope of that happening now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the one who's, you know, in the halls of Congress every day, but no, I don't think so. I would guess not. In fact, they apparently have come to some kind of agreement on DHS funding bill. So this is the regular appropriations bill for DHS, and there was a holdup there. And the reporting, who was it from? Politico, somebody reported that they've reached a deal, but had no details on what the deal was. But I just talked to somebody who's, you know, got their ear close to the ground on that. And they said, it's probably going to be terrible. They're not going to get anything out of it. So it's, you know,
you wouldn't think they would get anything out of that negotiation
because right. because there's
the
a government shutdown prospect.
The threat is to shut down the government and shoot yourself in the foot.
Right. And that was the whole appeal to the supplemental funding thing is
right.
that if it didn't happen, the government didn't shut
right.
down. And how many voters honestly really care about sending more billions to Ukraine anyway?
Right, right. I don't understand why, you know, the threat with all these things is once Chuck Schumer gets his hands on it, his very smart people start rewriting the fine print
right.
and undermining everything. So the key to achieving anything is to prevent that from happening.
Yep.
Why can't Johnson take one section of H.R. 2, which is the Republicans' big immigration bill that really would work, take one section, not achieve the whole thing, but one out of five or six sections, staple it to the Ukraine aid, and say, take it or leave it. We're leaving town. We passed it.
And my sense is that he couldn't pass it because he's got like a, he has a two vote majority now. In other words, if I think it's two vote, if two Republicans vote with the Democrats, then they can't pass anything. Right. So,
but they have, there must be some Democrats who want to cover their behinds by voting for a tough immigration bill that they can boast about because they're in swing districts and they'll lose the election on the immigration issue. So presumably they could make up for the squishy Republicans who defect. And a lot of people really want Ukraine aid and don't care that much about, you know, one provision from HR 2.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's, it's a good question. In fact, even that question, I think, would even apply to the appropriations bill, because there's obviously that's a problem because Republicans always lose government shutdown fights. But, you know, that's kind of like the, you know, the curse of the Bambino. You know what I mean? It's true until it's not true anymore. And it seems to me that if there was a shutdown fight, but the Republicans basically, you know, they all agreed on whatever it was. They came to agreement with the Democrats. They said, everything's fine. We're for this. But there's this one thing we're going to insist on. In other words, make Biden shut the government down over something that's so obvious or so absurd to be against it that it actually hurts them. And again, not the whole of HR 2, just one thing.
I think the Republicans always lose that because the media is against them. And yeah. They will not publicize what that one thing is. They will say Republicans are shutting the government down.
Right, right. And that's what they're obviously afraid of.
I love Chip Roy and all those people. They're always expecting toughness to achieve great things in appropriation government shutdown fights. And I don't think it ever really works. Maybe it did a bit with Obama. But, you know, I think they got a couple things. So I agree. I'm pessimistic that anything will be accomplished. But I'm terrified that this Democratic trick of proposing a bogus bill and having Republicans be against it might work.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will. I don't think the polls show really that it's changing the dynamics of the immigration issue yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that anybody who doesn't already agree with the president is going to buy that. I asked Rui Teixeira that a few weeks ago on the podcast, and he was like, do you really think anybody's going to believe that? So I don't know. It's right. On the other hand, their thinking really is, you know, they only need to sway 40,000 votes in three states. You know what I mean? It's or as this was the joke, who was it? Daniel Pipes tweeted this joke out that this is a Middle East joke, obviously. But I mean, that the Biden administration has now opted for the two-state solution, Michigan and Nevada. You know, so the point is they don't need to change that many minds or persuade that many people.
I think they need to persuade a lot of people, Mark, because the polls now, in contrast to 2020, show him in a much bigger hole.
On immigration, for sure, yeah.
He's down 4 or 5%. That's right. Not 40,000 votes. That's right, hundreds of thousands of votes.
No, that's a good point, yeah.
And, you know, even the polls to show him even nationally, which the latest poll did, it means he's way behind in the swing states.
Right, right, yeah.
So he's got to win by, you know, 5-6 percentage points in the popular vote if he wants to be president again. And I'm a Democrat, okay? I'm still holding out hope that he will see the light and decide to retire in glory.
Right, yeah.
At the convention. So I think that is possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but, you know, I guess anything's possible, you know? So, I mean, a supermodel can call me and ask me out on a date, but that's...
Supermodel's probably Robert Kennedy's running mate.
Yeah, well, that could be. Do we know who that's going to be? I mean...
It's going to be the gorgeous wife of... ex-wife of Sergey Brin, apparently.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that yet.
The head of Google, yeah.
But, I mean, Robert Kennedy Jr. brings up a good point because he obviously used to be a Democrat. I mean, he may still be again after running as an independent. And he's actually been, I won't say he's been good on immigration because he still wants high legal immigration, but he actually at least acknowledges that we should be enforcing the border. And you'd mentioned John Fetterman before, you know, as his... healing is, you know, from his stroke, his cognitive capacity is coming back. He's actually gotten better on a bunch of issues, or at least broken with kind of the current Democratic orthodoxy, not just on immigration, but also on the Gaza issue. So as a Democrat, and you actually ran for Democratic in the primary to run against Barbara Boxer, you actually got 94,000 votes. I looked it up. So that's 94,000 more than I've ever gotten.
Actually, the counts in California, as you know, take forever.
Right.
So I think they're probably still counting.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It was just 2010, so
it's still... I think I've passed the 100,000 mark, but
okay.
I ran a terrible campaign. I didn't know what I was doing, but the idea was to prove that there is this immigration control sentiment even within the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I proved, to my satisfaction, the opposite.
Right, okay.
There's no traction in the California Democratic Party for right. immigration control. There may be in some other states Democratic Party, but we're heavily Latino state.
Right.
You know, where you just can't, you can't talk about this stuff and get Democratic votes. I there were a lot of Republicans who were for me, but they couldn't vote in the Democratic primary.
Right, so. Right, of course.
So I don't, there weren't a lot of Fettermans in California, let's right. put it that way.
But apparently there are in Pennsylvania. I mean, Fetterman
yeah. oh, sure.
from the polling shows he's running like 20 points ahead of Joe Biden in
oh,
Pennsylvania.
Sure.
So why aren't more Democrats adopting something like, you know, a kind of even just illegal bad, legal good perspective on immigration, which is only half a loaf from my perspective, if that, is still better than what they have now. Why, you know, what happened to those people? What happened to Barbara Jordan and all the rest of them?
Well, I think in terms of the Democratic Party, what you say is they got overtaken by the, you know, racialized identity politics and the woke politics of the left.
Right.
And, you know, there's no benefit in most districts in a Democrat standing up and denouncing the left.
Right.
So in terms of the short term, they're all hiding behind this Schumer bill. They think they, right. they would be shifting to the center, I think, except they all think the Schumer bill gives them enough cover.
Interesting. Yeah.
And you may see some of that as it gets closer to the election. You know, people driving around in pickup trucks saying, I'm looking to deport illegals or whatever Governor Kemp in,
right.
Kemp yeah. in Georgia did. But I think for now, and then the press is, you know, the right's friend, because they're helping delude these Democrats into thinking it's going to work.
Right, right.
So they don't, you know, they all think, I can do what Tom Suozzi did.
That was the guy who ran in the special election?
Yeah, for the George Santos fabulous seat in
right.
Staten Island.
Right. And he kind of ran kind of quasi-Trumpy almost on immigration, right?
Right. He did make Trumpy noise. That's a very good point. He didn't just endorse the Senate bill, but he made a lot of Trumpy noises. In and a lot of empathetic noises for immigrants. So he
right.
he sort of combined the high emotional valence points of both sides, and it worked.
But what do you think it'll take for Democrats to, you know, move back somewhat toward the center on the issue? Will losing to Donald Trump again do it? I just don't see it, especially since it's going to be a close election. I mean, look what it took last time in the 60s and, well, as a result of the 60s, but in the 70s and 80s, it took multiple wallopings, wipeouts in a presidential election to result in Bill Clinton. It just seems to me that the Democratic Party is, if anything, even more wedded to an anti-borders perspective now.
Well, plus, if Trump wins, it's going to be an apocalyptic resistance. They're not going
right.
to worry about the border. They're just going to worry about stopping Trump. And I think there'll be, you know, some sort of riot in the street and some sort of radical lawfare. I mean, they're talking now about, you know, maybe they could pass a law quickly in the week they have where the new Congress is installed
right.
before Trump is inaugurated to invoke that portion of the Constitution that says he can't serve because he's an insurrectionist.
Right, right, yeah.
There are all sorts of crazy things. Immigration is going to be much too substantive to talk about.
Sure. And in a sense, the left isn't going to pull away from it because, you know, it's associated with Trump. In other words, it seems to me they have to lose with immigration as part of the mix to somebody who isn't Trump, because Trump being Trump just swamps, like you said, all policy concerns for people on the other side. My sense is that anyway.
That's a good point. And but, you know, Biden was supposed to be the Bill Clinton type. That's the bizarre thing.
Yep.
He was supposed to be the guy who could triangulate and would, you know, tell off the left. And occasionally he did. But he's just been way too weak, as you say. And I have a feeling he may discredit, it may be the opposite of that. He may discredit the idea of a Bill Clinton centrist coming along.
Oh, I see.
Or at least one term. Because they say, well, we tried that with Biden, and now we'll run one of our own.
Right, right.
Or run Ocasio-Cortez or somebody.
Right.
So I despair of them coming to this census. As you say, they need to be hit over the head with a sledgehammer for like 3 or 4 times.
Right.
Mark Shields had a very funny, it was like the stages of denial.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, well, it was the candidate's fault. That's the first thing.
Right, right, yeah.
and it's like, and then finally it says, get me just somebody who can win this thing.
Right, right.
Exactly. So that's the stage we want them to be at, and they're not there yet.
They're not even close, in my opinion. I mean,
it seems to me also a whole lot of it depends on who wins the Congress.
Right.
And if nobody's paying any attention to that, and I don't even know what the dynamics of that are. Does Trump have any coattails? Seems to me he might have reverse coattails where people could put in, you know, the Democrats would sweep Congress and Biden would just lose the precedent because people think he's too old and senile.
Well, Republicans are almost certainly going to take the Senate. I mean, I don't think even Trump can screw that up.
I disagree with that.
Okay.
Look at Sherrod Brown. He's ahead in all the polls right. in Ohio. You think he's going to lose? I don't think he's going to lose.
Right, yeah.
I mean, we'll find out who the Republican candidate, if it's somebody dynamic, he might win, but is John Tester going to lose? I don't think so.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's challenged it before. I mean, there are no slam dunks.
Well,
other than West Virginia, yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I still think the most likely outcome is that Republicans take the Senate, but Democrats take the House, you know.
Right. No, I think that's probably right, but I just don't think the Senate is a sure thing either.
Right, right.
They've blown this sort of math before.
Yeah, well, I mean, like they say, the Republicans are the stupid party, so that happens. So I don't know. I mean, what do you see sort of medium to long term, not this election, but, you know, over the next, I don't know, decade or so? How do you see the politics of this evolving? Because one of the things I think that can mix things up is obviously the ongoing realignment where the Democrats become sort of the party of the professional managerial class and then ethnic minorities. But, you know, Trump, if he like exceeds George W. Bush's percentage of the Hispanic vote, for instance, and, you know, gets, I don't know, 20 something percent or even 30% of black men or something, that starts to shake things up. And it seems like that would have to have some effect on the Democrats' immigration approach, too.
You would think. And I guess I'm sort of an optimist, and I think, you know, Trump's not going to live forever. If he becomes president, he will eventually be succeeded by somebody like J.D. Vance,
right,
who has Trump's policies but is a sane person.
Right.
And that person will have tremendous appeal. The left hates J.D. Vance now, in part precisely because they think he might be effective.
Right. But, I mean, neither he nor DeSantis turn off people in the middle of the road, persuadable people in the same way.
But you would be shocked at the reaction among my left-wing friends to me saying that I was for DeSantis.
Really? Wow.
It's like he's that fascistic person who tried to prevent people from saying gay in Florida. That's all they know about the guy. And he killed people in COVID. That's all they think about the guy, okay? And Vance, all they think about is he was against Trump, but now he's sold out and he's a craven toady for Trump.
But, I mean, none of those people were going to be Republican voters anyway. I'm talking about, you know, kind of swing folks in the suburbs. You know what I mean? Neither one of those guys is necessarily going to be repellent to people who voted Republican most of the time.
No,
but can't stand
once
Trump.
They get to know them. But I think they do have to start off in a little hole.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, I think eventually somehow the majority opinion will out. I mean, this has been the perennial problem of American politics for practically as long as I've been alive. I mean, Pat Goodell used to run these polls with a fictional character, Mr. Smith, who adopted a lot of common sense, you know, conservative views, but was still a Democrat. You know, he wanted to reform welfare. He wanted to do and that. But he was also for Medicare. And that person would like get 60 or 70% of the vote.
Sure, right.
But there's no way that person could get the nomination of either party.
Right, yeah. I mean, Rob Long makes that point that, you know, like a Southern, moderate Southern Democratic governor is the guy the Democrats could just win without any trouble if they had somebody like that. But the thing is, I think that's not necessarily untrue even on the Republican side. In other words, a Republican who's like, look, I'm pro-life, but, you know, we have to work in persuading people, so I'm not going to push for, you know, real early abortion bans. And you know, that kind of, in other words, I think there's a sort of Republican middle of the road candidate.
For Republicans, middle of the road seems to be, well, I sort of like a few foreign wars.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah.
You know, and I like the Langford Bill.
Right.
You know, it's a good step in the right direction, and we need the comprehensive immigration reform.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's, I see what you
mean. Moderate Republicans are Nikki Haley.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. But my point here is that Trump, in a sense, is a moderate Republican. I mean, he's not hardcore on abortion. He was, you know, he was advertising that jailbreak bill. And you know, even on immigration, you know, when push comes to shove, he was pushing that bill in 2018 that would have amnestied something like 3 million Dreamers in exchange for various changes. So my only point here is that, you know, Trump kind of is the moderate in a sense in the Republican Party, if not in affect.
But he's a different kind of moderate. He's a moderate who's half a Democrat.
Right.
In other words, he supports Social Security. He defends Social Security, defends Medicare.
Right.
That's not what moderate Republicans really do. They say, we like Social Security. We want to cut it 10% and raise the retirement age.
Right, right.
Which is not a crazy position, but it's not the position we're talking about. It's not Trump's position.
Right.
The question I had for you is, you mentioned the bill Trump was pushing in 2018.
And right.
My impression is that there are some bills with amnesties attached that you would go for.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah, yeah.
You know, how much of an amnesty would you tolerate for HR2?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, again, this is just me. I'm not speaking on anybody's behalf. But, you know, upgrading the DACAs to green card status in exchange for HR2, that would be worth it.
I agree.
Because they already have amnesty. You know, in a sense, it's sort of that train left the station. It's just, do you upgrade them from amnesty light to amnesty premium?
Yeah.
And in exchange for HR2, I'd do that in a minute. I would even add amnesty for people who've had TPS for more than 5 years in exchange for getting rid of the TPS law.
Right.
I mean, I've written on this and talked about it. Now, the idea of a broad amnesty that covers everybody in exchange for promises that they'll enforce the law in the future, that's absurd and would just be a replay of past mistakes. That's not going to happen. But, you know, piecemeal, they get a little bit of what they want. We get a little bit of what we want. That seems to me the way legislating should work in a functional society. It's just that our legislature doesn't work anymore.
I'm amazed that nobody has proposed that yet.
Yeah.
Likewise. The Democrats are always for amnesty. So why don't they say, why doesn't one Democrat say, you know, how about amnesty the Dreamers and we'll buy your HR2?
Yeah, because, you know, they're worried about primary challenges, I guess. And it's a similar thing among Republicans. I mean, I get this all the time. I don't have to run for office. I don't care. But, you know, it's like, how can you be for amnestying people? You know, they're all criminals and they can't. It's like, well, folks, we got to deal with reality. But my point is, I think these guys, some of them, even if they're willing to think about it, are afraid of primary challenges. That's why my sense has always been that the way to get to amnesty is sort of Nixon goes to China. Now, you have a hardcore enforcement, whole term, presidential term of real enforcement. You implement the mechanisms that are necessary down the road, e-verify, entry-exit tracking. You know, you tame sanctuary cities. And then after that president gets reelected, he can be Nixon going to China and say, now I'm okay with an amnesty in exchange for cutting legal immigration by 60%.
I'm with you. I'm not sure one term is enough.
Yeah, maybe. You're probably right. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I always said we have to wait for all the liberal cases to go through the courts.
Yeah, well.
And for whatever enforcement means you have, e-verify or whatever, to be held up in court, be approved by the court.
Right.
And actually be in effect for a few years.
Okay, so two terms and then his vice president succeeds and does, I don't know.
Or 6 years, yeah. Compromise.
Okay, that's fine.
Second half of the second term,
right.
Where welfare reform. Reagan did some welfare reform things and tax reform then.
Interesting.
Something can be accomplished.
Right.
I talked with a friend of mine who's has become a prominent, you know, liberal cable talk show personality, very left.
Mm-hmm.
And he has said, you know, I always thought this is obviously, if you want an amnesty, this is how you do it. Exactly what you laid out.
Right.
You have to prove to people that we control the borders and then we can tolerate an amnesty. And so, you know, people on the left know that, smart people on the left.
The question is, what is their goal? I mean, ostensibly, and for some people genuinely, their goal is to help illegal immigrants who have put down roots and allow them to kind of live a more normal life. I get that. And their rationale is, look, we've allowed this for whatever reason, we've allowed this to continue for so many years, we kind of need to let these people, I mean, come out of the shadows isn't really, that's a stupid cliche because they're not in the shadows. But nonetheless, I think the actual goal of a lot of people is not just fixing the status of people who are in limbo here. It's making sure that future people forever can come because they don't believe in immigration limits, period.
Well, that's right. And here we get to the other possible reason for why Biden is so weak is he's bought not just the arc of history theory, which says that inevitable Democratic majorities come from in part from greater immigration, but the fact that they can make sure it happens by keeping the border open.
Yeah.
And, you know, how could they not think about that? You know, it's become the least toxic version of replacement theory, and you'll be called a replacement theorist if you even mention it, but that is the theory of a lot of Democrats.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And now I still think, though, and I've said this before, I don't think that's the main rationale. I think that's like the whipped cream on top. The main rationale is they simply don't believe that immigration controls, immigration limits are morally defensible. They just think they're immoral.
I guess I'm distinguishing between the left, the America's Voice type people,
right,
or even to their left,
right,
and they obviously just don't recognize the concept of the border,
right, right.
And if you argue with them, it becomes clear.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it becomes, you know, and as you know, a friend of mine said, you know, they come over the border, everything's still in Spanish. They're still surrounded by Latinos. Okay,
right.
Why should they recognize the border, right? And the distinguish between those people and the conventional Democratic pals like Biden and, you know, practically every Democratic senator who has a consultant, the consultant will tell them this will help us. So those people don't think the border is morally defensible, but they just as soon have more Democratic voters to ensure, whatever it is they hope to achieve through more Democratic voters.
Right, right.
You know, the refundable child tax credit is theirs if they just keep the border open.
Right. Okay, so we're running up against the time. You want to make a prediction on who you think is going to win in November, or is it too early for that?
Well, it's not too early. I mean, I would predict that Trump is going to win, but the problem is he's been for 2 days now, every speech being crazier than the last one.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So that ramps up exponentially pretty quickly.
Right, right. Yeah,
if he keeps it up.
Yeah.
I just think the Biden people are whistling past the graveyard. So unless they do something, I think they're going to lose.
We'll have you on after the election, assuming the riots after that happens don't shut us down here, because Trump was talking about a bloodbath in the auto industry if he doesn't win. Well, if he does win, there's going to be an actual bloodbath right outside in front of our offices, probably. This is not going to be like last time.
I can still call you from my desert hideout.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So you have a Substack, right, for people to follow you. What's your Substack?
My Substack's called Kaus Files.
Right, which has been the name of your blog for 25 years.
Right, which my blog has sort of shifted to the Substack,
right,
as many people's blogs have.
Right.
And I don't write a lot. I try to only write when I think I have something to add.
But if people want to follow you, what's the address on the Substack?
That's a good question.
Okay. Well, we'll have it in the show notes.
The best thing is to Google Kaus Files Substack, right, and that'll pop
It'll
up.
Pop right up.
Okay. The Substack addresses are not very clear.
Right, right.
And I spent a lot of time tweeting at Kaus Mickey, not Mickey Kaus, but Kaus
Mickey. Kaus Mickey on Twitter or X or whatever I call it, Twitter. It's kind of like the Sears Tower in Chicago.
Right.
I remember doing one of those boat tours on the Chicago River, and they said, here's the Sears Tower. It's pronounced Sears, but it's spelled W-I-L-L-I-S, Willis Tower, because they changed the name. So it's spelled X, but it's pronounced Twitter. So that's Kaus Mickey, no hyphenation or any of that stuff. So anyway, thank you, Mickey. This was an enjoyable conversation, and maybe depending on what happens, actually either way after November, we may have you back on, talk some more immigration politics. Thanks for joining us.
That'd be great. Thank you, Mark.
That's it for this week's episode of Parsing Immigration Policy. If you have any complaints, suggestions, whatever commentary you might have, please just email us at center@cis.org, and I hope you will tune in for our next episode.